Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. Thank you for joining another show today. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. I have about 80 different shows for you to listen to since the show began back in January 2012. I've been here almost every week giving you a new show. And this week, I am interviewing director Dallas Jenkins, and I think I have him on the line here. Dallas, are you there?
I am here.
Great. Thank you for coming on board today and talking with us.
Well, I just want to officially apologize again. I apologize to you privately, but I want to apologize again for last time you were intended to have me on, and I got the time wrong, and so 100% my fault, and I'm very, very sorry, but I'm here today, and hopefully we'll make up for it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, I want to kind of dive right in and talk about, first of all, the short film that you did called The Ride, which you put together with your church, Harvest Bible Church. Tell me a little bit about the plot for those that haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, when, about last year in September, August or September, we were planning our Christmas Eve services. And I hadn't made a film in a couple of years. My last film had been What If, and I had come to Harvest to make this, to make movies, and it just hadn't been able to do it yet. And I thought, I really need to make something. And how about if we do a short film for Christmas? And so we sat in a room and thought about what we, the kind of story we could tell, and we came up with this idea of a cab driver. We just been online looking at different stories, and we were just looking around, and we thought it might be interesting on Christmas Eve, a cab driver who is a church member and who's comfortable in his own world. He's comfortable at church. He's comfortable with his family. He's, a good Christian guy, but when in his job and out in the, in the rest of the world, he's more disengaged. And we wanted to kind of capture that because we know that on Christmas, it's easy for people to kind of just get lost in their own family and in their own worlds. And that for Christmas Eve, it's not always a happy time for everybody. And so we thought, what if he got a passenger who was clearly disturbed, clearly going through something rough, and maybe that kind of jolts the cab driver out of his comfort zone. And so he picks up this passenger. It's the last passenger of the night. He doesn't even really want to do it. And he sees that something's wrong. The passenger is clearly disturbed, and he decides to extend the ride on purpose, the cab driver does, in an effort to kind of draw this guy out so that he can possibly figure out what's going on, maybe slow down something that's going to be negative, and hopefully he can connect with this guy on some level. And so that's what happens over the course of the film is the drive. That's why it's called The Ride. Is the ride takes place over the course of the evening, and the secrets that are revealed, and how these two connect, and how ultimate grace and truth are revealed is the thrust of the story.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how you can get such a powerful story out of two characters. Basically, they're the main characters.
Yeah, I mean, other than maybe there's one passenger at the very beginning who we see for maybe 30 seconds, but really the movie's just about these two guys, and that's why it worked well for a short film, because we only had two characters, so we didn't need to get into a ton of other stuff. So yeah, it worked well within 30 minutes.
Now, where did you shoot this?
We shot it in the Elgin area, and that's what our plan was. As we said, our plan all along for making feature-length films at this church has been the same. We're going to use the resources of our church. We have a large church. We have 13,000 people spread out over 7 campuses in the Chicago area, and we've got tons of people who want to, volunteer, who want to donate, whether it's their time or food or locations. We thought, why would we want to try to, do anything different? Let's take advantage of this. And so this is a good test case for us. For our future films, but to do it on a short film scale, and we shot it within a week. And from the time we came up with the idea, the design that was finished was just a few months, and I was ready to show on Christmas Eve.
That's great. Now, was this a sizable budget. It seemed like it would be very low budget.
Yeah, it was low budget, comparatively speaking to normal Hollywood films, because, though, we were able to save money by utilizing a lot of the church's resources. So, you know, we brought in, you know, a director of photography, a cinematographer. We brought in a production designer from out of town. We brought in the two main actors. And then we hired crew from the Chicago area. And that's where the bulk of the money comes from. That's in addition to renting equipment. So, I mean, it's still, you know, we spent more money than I think, you know, a smaller church might be able to afford, but certainly a lot less money than the average Hollywood production.
Now, how did you find your cast?
Well, I've worked with these guys before. The cab driver is a guy by the name of Kirk Wohler, who is one of my favorite actors and has been in, you know, dozens and dozens of films and TV shows, and he's been in all of my features that I've ever made, had supporting roles. And then the passenger has been in my last couple of films. His name is Brad Heller, and he was in Midnight Clear, the feature film I did about 5 years ago, and then he was in What If?, both smaller roles, but I've always loved him as an actor. And so those two guys, I immediately called up and I said, I got a perfect part for you. And they were like, where do we go? And so we got him out there right away.
Were there any challenges with shooting this? It seems pretty straightforward.
Well, most of it takes place in a cab. So, you know, we rented a car from a place that rents out cars for films. And it was a taxi cab already. And so we were able to, we had to basically, for most of the shooting, you realize it's at night and most of it takes place inside the cab. And so that presents its own challenges. You always have to decide how you want to shoot driving scenes. So when you watch movies and you see people inside a car, there's any number of ways that they do it. So one of the ways is, the car stays stable and you put a green screen around the car and then you fill in the exterior shots later. And so that's the easiest way to do it because you don't have to worry about audio problems. The car isn't moving. But that also isn't necessarily the cheapest way because you have to do a lot of work in post-production. Another way to do it is what's called poor man's process, which is where you put the car in a street, a dark street, and you set up the lights around the car, and then you move the lights around the car to make it look like they're going underneath street lights, and you have lights come by to make it look like they're car lights and whatnot. And then you can also use a trailer, which is what we did. We put the cab up on a trailer and attached to, you know, to a cab and to a, you know, to a truck, and basically drove it around, and we attached the cameras to the car and the lights to the car on the trailer. We had two guys standing on the trailer holding the cameras. I was inside the car underneath the seat, underneath the dashboard, you know, talking to the actors. And the problem with that, of course, was it was frigid. It was, you know, 20 below, plus they're driving in, down the highway. Mm-hmm. So the guys outside were absolutely freezing. But so there's a couple challenges in that sense. And, the car's moving, and so there's a little bouncing. There's some bouncing. There's some other cars driving by, so you've got audio issues. But for the most part, once we figured that out, then it became easier and took us a couple nights inside the cab, but it was worth it.
Yeah, it's perfect. It perfectly, you know, the look is perfect. So, now, did I hear that you're making a feature on this, about this too, about the ride?
Well, we talked about that. See, we've got a couple of, there's some Hollywood producers saw the short film, even though we were just doing it for a church, they saw the film and really loved it. And so they came to us and they're like, we want to do what you guys are doing. Want to partner with you to make some faith-based films. And so one of the ideas was not exactly to make this as a feature film, but to develop it as a television show. Where a TV show about a cab driver, and each week would be a different passenger. And so that's currently in development now. So obviously we don't know if that'll end up happening, but they're pretty big-time A-list Hollywood producers who are really passionate about it, and so hopefully they'll be able to set it up at a network or a cable network and get it set up as a TV show. I think it could be really powerful.
That sounds great, yeah. I also wanted to talk about your last feature, What If, with John Ratzenberger, Kevin Sorbo, Stelia Savante, Christy Swanson, and the list goes on. This seemed really familiar. When I watched it, I was like, oh, gee, this is kind of like It's a Wonderful Life. Now, did you think that when you were making it? I'm assuming you did, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a Wonderful Life is my favorite film of all time. And this is kind of a reverse It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life was about a man seeing what his life would have looked like had he made the wrong choice. And What If is a movie about a man seeing what his life would look like if he had made the right choice. He turned away from his faith and the possibility of a family 15 years ago. And now, 15 years later, he's living the fast life. He's got all the money he wants. He's got position and title. He's got a kind of trophy fiance, but he's kind of far from his faith and from the notion of like a family and his calling to be a minister. And he gets visited by John Ratzenberger. The main character is played by Kevin Sorbo. He gets visited by an angel, John Ratzenberger, in the form of a mechanic who comes along and says, I'm here to show you what your life would have been like had you followed your true calling. And so he gets a glimpse for, about 2 weeks into what his life would have looked like. So immediately he kind of gets knocked out. He wakes up and he's a husband and father and a pastor. One of his daughters is played by Debbie Ryan, who's a big star on the Disney Channel. He's married to Christy Swanson. He's getting ready to preach a sermon on Sunday morning. And of course, he hasn't been in church in 15 years. So what happens, how he figures all this out, how he navigates through all of this, trying to figure out what's going on and ultimately coming to value faith and family over material things is the thrust of the story.
Mm-hmm. And did you know right away who you wanted for these roles?
Partially. I'll tell you a quick story. I didn't know who I wanted for the main character right away, but for the mechanic, who turns out to be an angel, I knew John Ratzenberger. I'd met him at a couple of parties. And
yeah,
I really thought he'd be great. I love actors who have comedy in their background. And I also know he's politically conservative. He's he's spiritually minded. I just thought he might appreciate it. So I saw him at a party again, and I said, listen, John, have you thought about doing any independent lower budget movies? Or do you only do the big studio movies? And he said, no, if the script is right, I'd consider it. And I said, well, I've got a movie for you that I think you might be interested in, and it's an interesting role. And his friend, who knew that my dad had written the Left Behind books, and we had been talking about the Left Behind books and about faith-based films, his friend made a joke, and he said, oh, is it the part of God? And I said, no, but it's a part of an angel. And John laughed and then said, well, that's interesting, because just yesterday I was in my garden and I was thinking about how interesting it would be to play the part of an angel and how, like, to play the part of Michael the Archangel and what a cool character that would be. And I said, oh, that's interesting, because the character's name is Mike. And he said, and then he said, well, does he get to fight? And the reason he asked that is because he thought angels were always portrayed as these harp-playing, weak, kind of effeminate guys in the clouds, and he thought angels were more cool and could, were tougher. And I said, well, actually, he gets to punch the main character twice in the movie, because that's how he knocks him back into reality.
Uh-huh.
And he says, well, now I got to do the movie. So I sent him the script the next day, and he called me the day after that and said, it's special, I love it, I'm in. And Debbie Ryan, I've known for also, I went after her right away for the part of the daughter, because I'd known her before she was even on the Disney Channel. And I know she was a Christian and was interested in this kind of stuff. And so I sent her the script, and she and her mom loved it right away. And again, Christy Swanson, I hadn't thought of Christy for a long time. We were doing auditions and we couldn't get the right person. And I finally contacted a mutual friend of Christy's and mine. I said, hey, she came across my desk. Someone mentioned her. What do you think? She, same thing. She read the script. She called me before she was even done with the script and said, I'm in. And Kevin was a friend of mine from a couple of years past, and same thing, just, sent him the script. He loved it right away. So the cast came together really quickly, people that I either knew or knew of, and they all turned out to be perfect, because they're just their sensibilities towards the project were great, and they were able to offer insights into their characters that I hadn't thought of. So it was a really great experience.
Mm-hmm. And I actually know Stelio Savante. I work with him on a film, so I was like, oh, there's Stelio.
Stelio's a great, yeah, he's a good friend of mine also from running in a lot of the same circles that I knew Kevin and Christy from. And, again, Stelio loves faith-based projects and you know, yeah, I just called him up and said, hey, I got a part for you. Come on out. So.
Great. Now, where did you shoot that at?
This one was shot in Michigan. I had some good friends who were up in a small town in Manistee, Michigan. It's out in the middle of nowhere up there. And they were, we worked together on a couple projects. They were just guys who were trying to get their own projects together, their own production company going. And they said, why don't you check this place out as a possibility, because the movie takes place in the Midwest. And I love Michigan. I've been there many times. My family, my extended family is originally from there. So we went up and just partnered with them, and all the locations were all in this small town. And then we shot a little bit in Grand Rapids, some of the bigger city stuff in Grand Rapids for a few days. But, yeah, Michigan was great.
I love all the little symbols that you can find in the movie that maybe people wouldn't catch right away, like the name of the town, Clearville, which, you know, harkened back to Midnight Clear. I thought of that. And then on the tow truck you had the Hebrews 13:1-2, and
yep.
I thought that was great. So
did you
pick these things out as you were going along and say, I'm going to add this here and that there, or did it kind of naturally come out?
It was a little bit of both. You know, honestly, I think when you make a movie that is very personal, I think that some things kind of come through unintentionally. But other things we certainly did on purpose. Even the name Clearville, which not only was a reference to Midnight Clear, but also that his, you know, even though he was going to an alternate reality, his life was becoming much more clear. And so
mm-hmm.
Clearville is a place where, you know, he was able to see more clearly what his life should have been, what his life should be. We did other things that were cinematic. For instance, when he first is knocked into this alternate reality and he's kind of a fish out of water, we shot the film, we shot all the scenes handheld, which is where the camera feels
mm-hmm.
more, you know, jolty and it's
mm-hmm.
loose. The camera's not still. And so we did that because we were truly trying to show just how much out of water he was. But then whenever Mike the Angel would show up, we switched back to the regular style of filming where the cameras were smooth and locked down because we wanted to show that the Mike the Angel was providing stability. And then over time,
mm-hmm.
over the course of the film, the colors in the film become brighter and his, you know, the camera becomes more stable, and it just subconsciously tells you that things in his life are becoming clearer, they're becoming more in the focus and more steady. And, you know, also all the things in his other life where he's this, you know, rich businessman, even though that's his quote-unquote real life, we shot it to look very slick and almost fake
mm-hmm.
in a way. And we wanted his other life, the life with his family, even though at the time in the movie it's not real, we wanted it to look actually quite realistic and quite warm. And so you do those things as a filmmaker to just try to subtly, as much as possible, present a backdrop for your main characters to play in and for the audience to maybe feel a little bit of just, again, they're not always aware of it right away, but just to feel a little bit of security that the storyteller knows where he's going and, you know, and what they're trying to do.
That's great. Now, how do you work with the actors? Are you very hands-on, or do you just kind of let them do their own thing?
Well, I am very hands-on in the fact that, I mean, I was an actor myself, and
mm-hmm.
And so I think I understand the process a little bit. So I work a lot with them, but I love, I mean, my favorite thing is when they come up with stuff that I hadn't thought of, because I have a very strong
mm-hmm.
vision for what I'm looking for, and so my job is to tell them what that vision is, but their job is to also bring something to it that's even better or more. And so I remember one time, I mean, there's a scene in the film where Christy Swanson is playing, you know, Kevin Sorbo's wife, and they're obviously in crisis because Kevin's character in this alternate, in his alternate reality, where he's living the life of this husband and father and pastor. He obviously doesn't get it, so he's acting very strange. He doesn't know what to say all the time. He's not been a father before. Well, the characters that are around him, they all just think he's acting weird and crazy. So his wife can't understand why he's acting so unloving, and so she comes downstairs, and in the script called for her to read 2 Corinthians 13, the love chapter. And so Christy, the night before, comes to me and says, I like this scene, but I don't want to read the Bible to him. And I was like, I instantly got a little nervous. I thought, oh, she's a Hollywood actress, doesn't want to do the Christianity thing. And I said, well, I think this is an important scene. I think it's important. This is an important scripture. And she says, no, I love the scripture. I just think I should have him read it to me. And instantly the scene made more sense to me, because in that scene, I had had several actors audition with that scene, and it had never felt right. And I just thought it was because of the actresses. I thought it was their fault. But as soon as she just said, look, it just feels preachy to me, and I just don't feel like that's what a good wife would do. A good wife would be more supportive and encouraging of her husband and try to draw out in him his strengths as opposed to trying to preach something at him. And so she comes down, and so I said to her, that's a great idea, that's perfect. Let's not tell Kevin. So when we got to the set, and the cameras were rolling and she's doing the take, she says, I want you to read this to me. And she hands him the Bible and points to where she wants him to read. And Kevin didn't know it was coming. And so he just reacted in the moment. And, of course, when he read the scripture, he got emotional because it's a very powerful scripture. And so that's the take that showed up in the movie, is where when she hands him that Bible and asks him to read it, that's him reading it for the first time and not having prepared for it. And that's one of those moments where the actors can bring something that you never would have thought of. So, yes, I'm over the shoulder. I'm very much hands-on. I'm very involved with the actors more than any other part of the movie. But when they can give me something that I didn't think of, that's when the movie really takes off.
Your films are all very emotional. I was bawling during all of your movies. What do you think it is? Do you think it's moments like that that make it so relatable that people have their emotions triggered, or is it more than that? What makes the characters so believable that people have this kind of response?
Well, of course, you need a good script, and I've worked with some good screenwriters, but I usually, at the end, once I always kind of do the final rewrites of each script, and I think I tend to be a very sentimental, emotional guy. My wife and I are both criers. We cry at commercials, we cry at movies and TV, we cry in church during worship time. I mean, I'm just an emotional guy, so I'm always looking for those moments that can really kind of punch someone's gut in a good way. I've seen It's a Wonderful Life literally over 30 times, and every single time I see it still, I just weep like a baby in the last 15 minutes. And so, I think also it has to do with the first movie that I ever saw that made me want to make movies was a movie called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I saw that when I was in high school, and I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to arouse that kind of emotion. So I've always, I think, looked for that. But I think what really makes the difference is when a movie isn't afraid to take its time and it's not afraid to be quiet. And so that scene that I just described in What If, where she has him read the Bible to her, it's not necessarily an emotional scene. People aren't necessarily bawling during that scene, but that's the kind of scene that helps set the stage for later. If you don't have scenes like that that really connect you to the characters and connect the characters to each other, then when you do have the emotional scene, like at the end of What If, I won't give it away, but the ending is emotional, and usually when the movie's playing and groups of people, they're crying and whatnot, is because you care about the characters. And I think a lot of movies make the mistake of rushing those moments, and they try to get to the powerful, quote-unquote powerful moment too soon, and you haven't spent time with the characters, you haven't taken the time to get to know them, that everything's just been moving so quickly. And so I always try to tell filmmakers to really not be afraid to take your time and to have scenes that aren't necessarily inherently significant, by themselves, but they're part of a story that you're telling that connects you to the characters. And so, you know, I think also in a lot of Christian films, you know, the Christian elements of them don't feel natural or organic. You know, you could be telling a story about one thing, and then all of a sudden there's like some Christian scene or some salvation scene that really didn't have anything to do with the story. And I think that that kind of takes away from the emotional impact. But we told a story that's about a pastor, about a guy who's struggling in his marriage, about a guy who's struggling to find himself. And so when you put a guy in the part of the pastor, then there's going to be scenes that happen that make sense, such as his wife asking him to read the Bible, or him, a later scene in the film that was very emotional too, was him talking to someone on their deathbed. That's what pastors do. And I think even non-Christians can watch a movie like What If? I got lots of non-Christians saying that they loved the movie or that it was their favorite movie that I've made, even though it was the most explicitly Christian, because of the fact that the faith in the film felt very organic and didn't feel like it was crowbarred in where it didn't belong.
Right. Did you have any challenges when making this at all?
Well, we shot it in 15 days, which is an extraordinarily fast pace. So, you know, we didn't have a lot of money to make it with, and so every day was a challenge. I mean, every day was, you know, it was a miracle just to get it done. But again, I think that's where sometimes you're supposed to be, is that you don't get cocky when you're moving that quickly, and when you know that you've got to work so hard, so you're so focused, and the actors are so focused, and you end up making some creative choices that were caused by the fact that you were in a tough position. So always trying to fit things into a tight space, always trying to fit things in time-wise to a tight schedule, kind of produces an energy that I think can sometimes come through in your films. That's good. But again, we didn't get Christy on board until the week before shooting. I mean, that was a last minute thing that we didn't, you know, that we were going to know what was going to happen. And, you know, we had certainly a couple of challenges where we were shooting, you know, just shooting out in Manistee, which was a great place to shoot. But again, when you have to, you know, bring your crew in from another town and they're staying in a hotel, you know, it's just not as easy as when everyone's in their home. So everyone's homesick, everyone's tired. That's just the nature of low budget filmmaking. But I think we had a story that everyone believed in, and everyone enjoyed each other, and we had a good cast and crew, and so that made it easier.
Tell me a little bit about distribution for this, and also for the ride. Like, how do people see these?
Well, the first movie I ever made back in 2000 was Hometown Legend, which is a high school football film set in the South, which at the time we made the film didn't have distribution. We just made it independently. That's what independent means, is when you finance it and produce it outside of the studio system or the distribution system. And so what we did is, you know, we made the film and then we had a screening and where we invited all the distributors. And, you know, 90% of movies that do that never see the light of day. But we felt like we had a good cast and a good movie, and we thought we had a chance. And Warner Brothers ended up picking it up and distributing it. And there was another distributor that came in to handle those Porchlight Entertainment. Distributed around the world. We were very fortunate in that way. And then Midnight Clear was the same thing, made it without distribution. But, you know, we knew that we had some options eventually, but we wanted to, you know, just first do the movie on our own. And then that Midnight Clear got picked up by Lionsgate. What if we had distribution going into it? We were partnered with a company called PureFlix, and PureFlix is the one who actually had the idea for the movie. And when I met with them, you know, they're a smaller distribution company. They'd just been started a couple years before this movie. And I said, look, you know, I'm looking for some projects. You guys are looking for some partnerships. I mean, let's, you know, what do you got? And they said, well, we got this idea for a movie. So we brought in the financing on our company, and you know, my directing and producing, and they brought in the distribution and also some of the physical production, hiring of the crew and whatnot. So so we knew going into it before we made the movie that they were going to distribute it. And so they're able to get that movie, into the, you know, stores and whatnot. Well, then we decided once we were done with the movie turned out really well, we thought. So we thought, well, let's go for theatrical distribution. So we partnered with another company that handled and booked the theaters for us. And so, you know, we financed it, but we basically moved the movie around the country for about 6 to 8 months. You know, we'd show it in the 50 theaters here, and then another 50, you know, we'd let that play for a couple of weeks, and then we'd set it up in another 50 cities and play that, you know, so that's the hard, slow, small way to do it. Ideally, you get, you know, sometimes it's just best to get a big distributor to come in and say, we'll take this for you. But for this film, we had it going in.
So how can people see it now? Is it on Amazon, on Hulu? It's probably not on Hulu yet.
Yeah, What If is everywhere. What If is everywhere. You can get What If at, it's been out for a couple of years now, so I don't think you can get it mm-hmm. at Walmart anymore, but you can get it in most Christian bookstores and Amazon, of course. It's on Amazon for only $7, $7.50, so that's a great deal there. You can get it online anywhere. It's on Netflix. But of course, we prefer people to buy it. if they want to just watch it on Netflix, it's for sure available there. Amazon Instant Viewing, iTunes Instant Viewing. The Ride, the short film, isn't out yet. We're distributing that to some churches this Christmas Eve for them to play it on the Christmas Eve service because we want them to have the same experience our church did, where people were literally, you know, cheering and having that kind of a Christmas Eve service experience. But then next year we'll make it available for people to purchase as well for low cost so they can have it for themselves, for their friends, or for their church. But, yeah, What If and Midnight Clear and Hometown Legend are all easily found online.
Okay. Now, you mentioned churches showing The Ride. If a church wants to contact you and have it shown at their church, how would they do that? Do you have an email address or something that you'd want to give out?
Yeah, for this year, they can't. It's only showing in some of our affiliate churches for this Christmas.
Okay.
But next year they'll be able to. If they want to contact me about anything, whether it's this, how to show The Ride, or where to get the movie, or if they've got advice, I'm easily found on Facebook at Dallas Jenkins, and my Twitter handle is twitter.com/DallasJenkins. And, of course, through our website, which is Jenkins-entertainment.com. That's Jenkins-entertainment.com. People can contact me there too. And I respond to every email, and I'm glad to give, whether it's, you know, career. I love talking films and career, and then also just giving information on where people can get our stuff.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, a lot of people have had difficulty if they are a faith-based filmmaker or an actor like Stephen Baldwin, who's a born-again Christian in the business. Real quick, before we end, I just wanted to ask you how a person can go about being in a business like this and keep their faith and do these types of projects. How do you persevere through that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like any business. I think it's important to do your job well. I don't think that we're necessarily called to preach at everyone that we meet. And so I think that if we expect that we're going to go into auditions and trying to, you know, convert everybody, mm-hmm. that's not going to go well for us, because it wouldn't necessarily go well for anybody. But I think we just have to work really hard. I think we have to also create some of our own stories. But for actors, if you're grounded in a good church, grounded in a good family, Hollywood wants to work with people who are talented and who work hard. And if you work as hard as everybody else or harder than everyone else, and you do your job well, you're going to be fine. Now, the question becomes of what kind of projects do you do? Do you limit yourselves to projects that reflect your values? And then, of course, it becomes more difficult because most mm-hmm. people in Hollywood don't necessarily share your values. But, you know, again, that's where you just got to keep working hard and, giving yourself opportunities and figuring out for yourself what your standards are and following those. But the Lord will, God has a plan for what your life is. And sometimes, again, that might mean you have to generate your own projects, finding other people to work with, connecting with other filmmakers. But that's what Hollywood is anyway, is networking mm-hmm. and connecting with people and making friendships. And I hope that, I would hope that there's more and more Christian actors and directors and writers who don't stay outside the Hollywood system, but who actually go into the Hollywood system as salt and light, thinking, I'm going to make an impact, I'm going to do my job, and that way, then it will become easier and easier. Right now, it feels difficult because there's so few Christians. But the more that there are, the easier it gets, just because you don't feel like you're alone. And then we're not trying to change the world. We're not trying to change, Hollywood, who they are. We're just trying to change, what people see when they watch movies, and so we want them to see the best of what we have to offer. And so, again, hard work and finding, you know, other people to kind of ground you and to keep you sane can make it a lot easier.
Okay, great. Before we go, is there any other website that you want to give out that you haven't given out already?
Well, again, jenkins-entertainment.com is the main one. Obviously, if they're interested in what our church is doing, because we're developing movies right now. We should have a movie coming out next year that we're making. You know, it's harvestbiblechapel.org. It's Harvest Bible Chapel in Chicago. And that's Pastor James McDonald. He's all on the radio all over the country. And so that's where we're and you can see some of the videos we've done there. And again, soon the short film, The Ride, will be available there as well. But for now, that's just for people who just want to get an idea of what we're doing, what we're developing right now.
Great. Well, I'm glad that we finally got to talk, Dallas. I finally got you on the show.
Yes, and again, I'm so sorry about last time, but hopefully we were able to get this. Thankfully, we were able to get this done today.
Yeah, and I will talk to you soon, but I have to let you go off the show right now. But I'll talk to you soon, and thank you for coming on board.
All right, thanks again, Rachel. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was a wonderful conversation with Dallas Jenkins. And like he mentioned, he tried to come on the show at a different time, and unfortunately that didn't work out, but he came back, and I was happy to talk to him today. But if you haven't seen the films that he's talking about, I highly suggest watching them. Like I said, they are faith-based films, so keep that in mind. If you are interested at all in faith-based films, you will love them. If you're looking for a nice family film, they are good for the whole family. It's sometimes hard to find those G-rated films that are interesting and keep your interest as an adult, you know. So these are definitely a good find for those. The Ride, of course, isn't out yet, but What If, like he mentioned, Midnight Clear with Stephen Baldwin, who I had the privilege of interviewing when that came out. It was shown here at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, and I had a chance to interview Stephen back then and actually meet Dallas, and that's how I originally met Dallas. So all those films are available out online. And that's about it, guys. If you want any more information, check out his website, like he mentioned. And I'm not going to have a show next week. I will actually be out of town, but I will be back on the 15th. And if you are a filmmaker out there and you'd like to be on the show, please feel free to email me your information at ravenprods@yahoo.com. That's ravenprods at yahoo.com. And I'll be happy to take a look at it. In the meantime, also please like our Facebook page, which is just like this show, Indie Streak, so www.facebook.com/IndieStreak. Please like the page. I have information not only about the show, but also about events and about castings. A lot of them are here in South Florida where I am, but I do have other things as well. And you can always email me if you have something that you'd like to be put up on my Facebook site. Just let me know. And please follow up with me because I do get bombarded with a lot of requests, and sometimes I don't want anything to fall to the cracks, so please follow up with me. Also, if you're local in South Florida, make sure that you turn in your film to the LDub Film Festival. The deadline is September 3rd, and for more information on that, you can go to www.lakeworthplayhouse.org. That's coming up soon at the end of September. And also, listen to the archives. Last week, I interviewed Bruce Boxleitner, the actor Bruce Boxleitner, who you might remember from the movie Tron, for example, and the TV show Babylon 5, Scarecrow and Mrs. King, How the West Was Won. He's done a ton of work, huge career, a 40-year career, and I also talked to him about his Hallmark TV show Cedar Cove. So if you missed that interview, definitely go back and listen to it. He gave some information, advice about the business, his feelings about the business, etc. So check that out along with the rest of the archives. And I will not be here next week, but I will be back on the 15th with someone new. So please tune in at that time. You'll notice that today the show was at 3 o'clock, but normally it is on Sundays at 1 o'clock. I did change the schedule a little bit just for Dallas because I really wanted him to come on the show. So otherwise, we're at 1 o'clock on Sundays. So I will talk to you guys then. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.